Okay, great. Here we are. Another podcast and another victim, I think. No. We're going to have some fun today. We've got Chess Moulton here today. I got my name right. We've been practicing that. We're in Ringinglow in outside Sheffield, and we are in a very miserable day on... Where are we? Oh, we're the 1st of November today.
Today is the November the 1st.
We are. So we're another month. So there you are.
Yep.
So I'm... we'll just see what happens.
Yeah.
Over you go. Right then. When did we meet each other?
We met just earlier in the week, didn't we? I was doing a speaking engagement at a networking event, and you were there, and somebody sort of put us together and thought it'd be a good idea if we had a chat, and here we are having a chat.
Here we are having a chat.
So, you know, kudos to all that.
Well, this is what's...
Thanks, networking. Mark.
Yeah, exactly. But we've been having some fun with these podcasts, which I think is, rather than being too formulaic, it's the idea is just to sort of let things happen.
Yeah.
And we're talking about it now. We met up, as you say, probably 3 or 4 days ago. So it's quite a spontaneous idea.
Mm-hmm.
Intriguingly, there's lots of crossovers. We've never met, but you're originally from Canada.
I am, yeah.
I guessed East Canada.
Eastern Canada.
So I've known some people who lived in Toronto.
All right.
And they were kind of in between the two, the French-speaking Eastern sort of Canadian, as opposed to the West Coast, Vancouver.
Yeah.
And I know the West Coast better. I don't know the East, but I do know Toronto. And it sort of like felt like you were in between.
Toronto's about 1,000 miles from I was born and raised in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Toronto's about... So Montreal's about 800 miles west. Toronto's add on about another 200 miles, give or take. So it's about 1,000 miles west. And then when you get to Toronto, you've got another 3,000 miles to go before you get to Vancouver.
Yes.
So about 4,000 miles from one side to the other.
That's a kind of crazy scale compared with the UK.
Yes. The interesting thing about the UK is that when I knew I was going to come to live here, which is just a little over 8 years ago now, 8 years and 1 month exactly today, I did a little bit of research because there's this thing called the internet. Don't know if you've heard about it or not, but I was able to get onto the internet. Yeah, I was able to get on the internet and do some research. So the province of Nova Scotia, which is where I... So, to put it in context, if it was America, it would be called a state.
Yeah.
But in Canada, we call them provinces. Some people don't know that, but most people do. So, the province of Nova Scotia... So, England is twice the size, geographically, of the province of Nova Scotia.
Okay, right.
Now, the population of Nova Scotia just rounded up to 1 million, because it's about 960, 70, 80,000, something like that. So just under 1 million. Let's just call it 1 million for the sake of easy math.
Yeah.
So I've come to a place where there is twice the land mass with approximately 50 times the population.
Right. Big change.
Bit busy. Well, I actually didn't come here from there, but I get your point. Yes, where I grew up and when I grew up was growing up in Nova Scotia. That's what the position was. So it's a bit busy. There's a lot of people. I don't have to take on the entire country all myself by once. There's a lot of people. I'm amazed at... Where I grew up, we didn't have like a highway system the way that is here. Like in that, if I had grown up in Toronto, where the 401 is and big city, because in Toronto there's, 4 million people. Montreal, there was about 2.5-3 million people. So they have the big highway systems. They have that whole infrastructure.
Right.
Although I've been to Montreal and Toronto many times when I was living in Canada. But where I lived, we didn't have, the dual carriageway here was pretty much the highway.
You're right.
Yeah, big highway.
Yeah. Well, highways are big motorways, I think, for us.
We have motorways.
But somehow, I think the biggest thing, as I get when I went to Canada and been a few times, is the scale. You don't understand how big it is.
Correct.
That's... it can be overwhelming is probably the wrong word, but it tends to be unimaginable without being too intimidating. But at the same time, you don't travel like, you know, where we're here in this country, we get massive contrast within a few hundred miles.
Yeah.
So you can go to Scotland, Lake District,
yeah,
Cornwall, whatever it is, and that's all within striking distance of a day's drive easily. I just insane. So in you coming over to the UK, what was the stimulus? Why did you come over here?
I left Canada in 1994.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was a long swim. I was all shriveled up for a long time before
the
I dried out.
Didn't quite
yeah, yeah, no, no, okay. It did not at all. I left there. I moved to Barbados. I lived in Barbados for 17 and a half years. Then I moved to the UK. I've been extremely fortunate. Look, let me tell you something, Martin. I thank my stars every single morning when I wake up, the life I've had. I've just had an amazing life. You know, I can remember, I was just saying to somebody the other day, and I remember when I was sitting upstairs in my bedroom with the door closed when I was 13, 14 years old, as you would back in the day, you know, listening to my Hendrix and Alice Cooper and Sabbath and Zeppelin and Morrison and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and Deep Purple.
Now we're getting your age.
Yeah. If you had flown in through the window and said, this is what you're going to do, and this is where you're going to go, and this is what you're going to be involved in, I would have ran as far from you as I could have. You would have been completely insane and mad. But as it's turned out quite well, and it's not over yet. But when I came here, it was different for me. Why I came here, which is the original question.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's not get lost. Why I came here? I had an opportunity to come here to live and work. My wife wanted to live here, and she gave me a choice.
This sounds
well, sort of. I mean,
is she Canadian?
No, she's not. My wife is Barbadian.
Oh,
But if she hears the broadcast, it'll be the end of me. Will you be one of the pallbearers?
No,
you seem like a
willingly.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah.
She had been up here doing on a fellowship, and at the end of the fellowship, she had said, "Well, you know, I can come home. You want me to come home? I'll come home. And if you want me to stay, I'll stay. I've got some opportunities here. So what do you want me to do?" Now, because it's audio and not visual, your listeners can't see what I look like, but I'm not as stupid as I look.
There will be an accompanying picture.
Yeah, but nobody's that dumb. Right? Nobody's as stupid as I look. She had lived and worked here some years before we had met. And she'd lived here for about 5 or 6 years here in the UK and in Dublin, in fact, as well. You know, if she'd wanted to come home, she would have just said, okay, well, look, you know, it's coming to an end. Come and collect me and let's pack up and move back home again, right? And would have been done. But as she gave me the opportunity to make a choice, I'm like I said, that's stupid. So I figured she wanted to live here. So I said, all right, well, look, you stay there. Going back and forth as I had been for about a year, it's not a way to have a marriage.
No.
And it's not. It wasn't my preferred lifestyle in any event. So I said, look, you stay there, I'll pack up here, and I'll move up there. But I said, with one provision, I said, you have to give me 3 to 5 years. I said, just don't do all this, and like 6 months later, and I'm like, oh, I know, I'm something. No, that's not going to work, because she knew what I was walking away from there. So anyway, 8 years later, here I still am. Passport, citizenship, everything's intact. Bought a house, have a mortgage.
Yeah.
Like me,
you've become
or love me, we're here now, so we're not getting rid of me.
So I'm going to be showing my ignorance here. Barbadian. Mm-hmm. Are not British, naturally British citizens.
They were up until 19... Well, Barbadians up until independence in 1966. If they had a passport, it was a British passport because they were British territory.
Yeah, yeah.
But Barbados became its own independent country in November the 30th, 1966. So everyone there has a Barbadian passport.
Yes.
So my wife has a Barbadian passport and a British passport. I have a Canadian passport and a British passport and a permanent residency status in Barbados as well, so... I'm extremely fortunate, and that's only the small bit of it. I'm extremely fortunate. I count my lucky stars every morning when I wake up. I get a choice as to what I want to do and where I want to live. Not everybody has that opportunity, and I'm so grateful and try to be so humble about it.
So is that? I mean, okay, that's a good segue into what you do as such.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'd never heard of a thing called a stress master before.
Yeah.
And this is the first time, you know, I think I've kind of met lots of things and so on. But obviously, you always find somebody or something different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about the world as it is.
Yeah.
So you explain to me and others, I mean, I'm going to say this really slowly, it's stress master.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you call yourself.
Yeah, the stress master.
So, yeah. So what does that mean? What is it? You're talking...
Mm-hmm.
I think talking to reserved English British, it's not a concept that either I've lived in a bubble that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So where's that come from?
Okay, so my background is psychotherapy, hypnotherapy, counseling. I can go, if I wanted to bore you and the listeners, I could take you all the way back to when I was 15 years old, but I won't do that.
So before you were born, 15 years old?
No, 15, when I was 15 years old.
15.
Yeah, 15, 16 years old. But for the last 30 years, in one form or another, I've been counseling, therapy, the coaching is now what it's called. Part of it is coaching. So I've been doing what I do in one form or another for, nigh on about 30 years now. One main thing has come up each and every time of my clients, my one-to-one clients, my personal one-to-one clients, and people, in rooms, workshops and seminars that I've given over the years as well. Everybody seems to be having stress. Some people will come in and they'll say, Chess, I got stress. Can you help me out? Some people go all around the bush and they tell me all kinds of wonderful stories and things that have happened to them, things that are happening to them, mostly not very nice. Most of them are pretty negative and pretty bad, all on the way to trying to explain to me that they have stress.
Okay.
So this is the top frequent, most common thing that I've heard over 30 years of counseling and providing therapy and coaching people. In three different parts of the world.
Yeah.
And so I've been able to determine that stress is either the cause of or the result of most of what's wrong with us today. It all comes back to stress.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People have a lot of stress. And people here in the UK are not immune to stress. And the 8 years I've been here, I had a practice. I have a private practice, as we call it, and I do seminars and workshops and these types of things, teams as well, corporate stuff. And there's always stress. So stress is either the cause of what's going on with you, or what's going on with you results in stress. So stress is either the cause of or the result of a lot of what, I would say most of what's wrong with people, in terms of, they're having their issues, that way. So I guess we just decided that, a marketing tool in terms of how to describe what I do and to be able to attract the people that I want to help.
Right.
That allows me the opportunity to spread out into a lot of other areas because stress is the way into most people's lives. I'm in some parts of the world. I'm considered to be an authority on process addiction. There's four things that I've seen in the time that I've been doing this that seem to be the where the stress resides at, which is also then where the solution resides at, which is communication. People are stressed out because they're not having good communication. They either can't get their point across, or they're not understanding what the point coming in is. So they're either the sender or the receiver, and it's not going terribly well. So there's some stress there. Motivation is another area where people seem to have a lot of stress because they either can't get motivated, or when they get motivated, they can't stay motivated for very long. So there's a whole world in there around that that I can provide for them if that's where their issue, that's where their stress issue is. Relationships, we don't have enough time in the day to get me started on that one. Right. A lot of people have issues in their relationships, toxic, dysfunctional relationships that are giving them stress. And the last one is planning. People aren't planning well. You know, they don't have their goals sorted out, or they have them, but they don't know how to implement them. They don't have a plan. They have some kind of a varied, wide kind of ranging way. It's not defined. There's nothing specific, and they're getting stressed out because they're not getting the results they want out of their career or their life or a particular thing that they're doing, some particular project or whatever. Because maybe there hasn't. So you know, I talk a little bit about. I can show people the gold standard of goal setting and implementation. We talk about the difference between time and task management.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of people who are task management oriented who have been slotted into a time management system, and that gives them stress right up and down the eyeballs.
Isn't that counterproductive in that sense?
Yeah. Right, okay. So there's all of this all around that one little thing called stress. And so this is what it is. The stress master.
I'm interested. Well, it is stress master. About the first thing that jumped out was, this is not an experience that you've in one place. You've got your Barbadian, you've got Canadians, you've got UK. You know, you think this is a universal.
I've been fortunate enough to work in Africa. I've been in the Middle East.
Right. So it's everybody.
It's human. If you're
so
human,
talking, there's no boundaries to it. There's no boundaries. Right.
Some people will have stress more or less than others, depending. So you really want to get into this? So basically, there are three things that we do as humans. Yeah.
Right.
There's only three. If you're doing a fourth thing, then you're not human, so you're from some other planet, right? Which means you could probably run this one. I'll tell you what, I'll be your manager, we'll make millions together. But I'm just going to go
out.
I'm just going to go, I'm going to stick my neck, I'm going to go on a limb here, right? Yeah. I'm just going to presume, could I be right, that you're human, you're from this planet, yeah?
Well, some people might disagree.
I know the feeling there, but I can verify I am human. As you can as well. So if you're human, then there are only three things that you're doing, right? We think, we feel, and we behave, and that's it. So behavior can be subdivided into actions and reactions, and that's all we do is we think, feel, and behave. That's pretty much it. Okay. Now, it's how we think, feel, and behave into these other three. They can't see, but I'm holding up fingers here in the air.
I should take a picture of that. Yeah. No, I will.
So basically what I've done is I've just reduced 7.5 billion people to three fingers on my right hand. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
The other 500 million are the aliens or whatever, I'm not sure. but anyways, so the other three on my left hand, so it are people, places, and things. So that pretty much describes all that's on planet Earth is people, places, stuff, you know, whatever. Right?
Yeah,
briefcases, yellow coffee cups, you know, whatever it is. Brown picket fences, well, whatever they are, stuff, right? Green bins, right? Whatever they are. Blue cars, whatever they are. So it's how we think, feel, and behave in relation to people, places, and things that dictates the quality of our life.
Right.
So if how we relate to people, places, and things isn't going so great all of the time or sometimes, then stress levels will go up,
right?
So some people are just stressed all the time, and some people have it pretty much together, and there's only, let's say, take people. Maybe there's just a certain type of a personality that might kind of, you know, get them wound up, or they become wound up, right? Then the stress levels go up a little bit. But then when they remove themselves from that type of, that personality type again, then they go back to be. But some people are, you know, from the time they wake up until the time they go to sleep, it's just up to here all the time, isn't it? Right. So some people. So there's varying degrees, of course, as you would expect with almost everything. Does it make sense?
I can see where you're coming from. I'm just interested, because just on a personal level, yeah. if you're going from mm-hmm. day to day, I kind of thrive on stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I had no stress, I don't mm-hmm. know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I perform good. Much better mm-hmm. at a high level of stress,
good.
I think.
Good. Yeah, good, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I do recognize, mm-hmm. I think, now these mm-hmm. days, where mm-hmm. you might reach a limit where the stress level, although it's not killing you, it impedes your
thought process. Well, it is a lot, killing a lot of people.
And I think, yeah, this yeah. is it. So how do you cater for all that whole spectrum of people?
Easily explainable.
Easily explainable. Easily explainable. I've opened that one up.
Yeah, no, that's fine. No, that's fine. I appreciate that. So you've heard of the fight, flight, and freeze syndrome?
I have, yes.
Okay. So this is, so first of all, we can't get rid of stress.
Right.
And we wouldn't want to. Stress is an innate part of us. We have a stress system in us that we're born with. It's part of who we are as human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it serves a purpose, right? So I'm walking down the, I'm out in some place in somewhere, and something happens that I consider to be intense, dangerous, life-threatening.
Yep.
You know, going up the scale, right? My stress system kicks in.
Right. Your natural stress.
That's correct. Yeah, okay. Right? And I'm either going to fight, I'm going to flight, so it means I'm going to run.
Yeah.
I'm going to take myself out of the situation.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to stay and try and sort it out somehow, or blend in, or whatever I want to do that way, right?
Okay.
I might not fight, but I still stick around and see what other options are available to me. So the stress level goes up. So let's just say if it was, you know, if I was going through some path and I came across some tiger, some bear, or some wolf, or some dog, mad dog, or whatever, that I thought that, you know, was going to attack me and eat me up or whatever, or injure me,
right.
I could choose to run.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. So it's that natural stress system in me then that's going to start to kick off the adrenaline, that hormone adrenaline, give me that adrenaline rush, which now is going to surge through my body, right? And make the blood go to where I need it to go, in my hips, my legs, my calves, my feet, you know, wherever, so I can start to run like hell to get, you know, to get out of there, if that's what I choose to do.
Right.
Or it's gonna surge through my body and make me feel like I'm stronger and alert now and more, and I can start throwing my rocks and my wood or my chuck whatever I can at the animal. Let's just use this sort
yeah,
of
yeah.
primitive kind of thing, yeah, because that's yeah. where it all came from, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if I just want to, or if I freeze, and then I'm trying to sort out in my head, what's my next move? What do I do?
Mm.
How do I get out of this situation? I can't run because you can't outrun this animal, right? So what am I going to do now? Am I going to, you know, camouflage myself? Am I going to, what am I going to do?
Mm.
So this is the fight, flight, and freeze method, right?
Yep.
This is what happens when our stress levels go up. It prepares us to do one of those three.
Okay.
And so we would want it, and we have it, and we can't get rid of it.
Right, okay.
The problem in modern-day life is that because we have all this instant gratification, everything else going on, right? Everything seems to be, you know, everything's intense, everything's now, everything's, and we get stressed out if I don't get it now, and if I don't get it the way I want it, how I want it, and done. So when, in normal circumstances, when that dangerous situation, or that intense, dangerous, or life-threatening situation dissipates or yes, disappears, or I remove myself from it, which means now I'm not in danger anymore, then that stress level subsides. I just go back to being normal again. Yeah? Good. But what happens today, because everything is so now, and everything seems to be, you know, everything's stress.
Right.
Yeah. Those levels never get to go back down to where they should be normally.
Okay.
So then people are always, there's the word, people are always stressed out.
Right.
Unnecessarily.
So you're
in my judgment.
Yeah. So you're in your judgment then, mm-hmm. can you identify where people's normal stress level is?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that you can
Speaking, using your example for yourself, for example, you say you thrive on stress. So then we get into what's called eustress. So this is normal stress.
Right.
So not all stress is negative.
No, absolutely.
There is positive stress, yeah. And I think probably what you're describing for yourself is probably that positive stress, where there's a certain amount of stress that motivates you.
Yeah.
Right? It drives you.
Puts you, makes you more alert.
Yes.
You're on top of things.
Yeah. Like. Well, right. You're on top of things. It makes you more alert, just like the guy standing in the path with the tiger staring, staring him down, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you, what for you is going on is not dangerous or life-threatening. And I would venture to say it may not even be intense.
Right.
So it's just that normal alertness. As you say, what's a normal stress level? You're describing it.
Right.
Right.
But that's very personal, isn't it? So, and you would have, I know people that would react very differently.
Correct.
To myself.
Correct.
In circumstances.
Correct.
And equally, I also don't know, as I haven't been in some extreme circumstances, how I would react.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to think I would react in a certain way, but that's just ego or something.
Mm-hmm.
But our lives are very cushioned, not cushioned, what's the word I'm looking for? Protected.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have walk into tigers every day.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have stress, you know, life-threatening. Mm-hmm. Most of us don't have life-threatening example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're couched in a modern world.
Mm-hmm.
So is it that, I'm personally, I think we're quite interesting, is that we don't suffer enough stress and we're not using our natural human qualities, and therefore you get lost, you get frustrated. I'm thinking frustration and stress are related here.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Frustration could be what you might call stress light.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, and you relieve it in a modern way, where maybe we should be going a bit deeper.
Well, you raise another good point. So. Here's the thing. Yes, we wouldn't naturally, be walking down, the road in Sheffield or London or anywhere else in any major city,
right,
and come across a tiger or a bear or some, human-eating animal, right, that we would need to be afraid of. But for some people, having to stand in a queue for an extra 10 minutes. Having to merge into that lane at the roundabout because they're working on the roundabout, and that now that instead, and so they're going to be late for that meeting for maybe 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
To listen to them go on and talk about how that is, you'd think that there was a tiger staring them in the eye.
Right.
You see what I mean, right?
Yeah, I do.
And I'm not minimizing that for anybody.
Yeah.
I get it. I'm there with them. My job is to help them reorganize themselves so they don't see that tiger staring them in the face anymore. That's my job, and I think I do it. My clients would tell me that I do it well. I guess I'll take their judgment on that. Thank you. But different people see different things different ways, right?
Yeah.
Now, you might go to that roundabout and they're merging and it takes you an extra 10 minutes to get through the roundabout and you're thinking, that's okay because, I'm here listening to my music in my car and I'm happy in my life and I can look around and see the other people walking up and down the street and, I'm happy to get home when I get there. And other people, they're pounding, they're ready to road rage and everything else.
Right.
And it's just an extra 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, if not that, justifiably so or not, then 6 months from now they'd be complaining, well, look at all the potholes at that roundabout. Why didn't they fix that? Well, the only way they can fix it is to close down a lane and it takes them a couple of days to pave it over and organize the pipes underneath and all the rest of it. So, you'd be stressed out with the potholes, you'd be stressed out with the when they fix the thing. And so either way, you see what I mean?
I do, yeah.
So everybody's so one person's calm is another person's stress.
Right. So, if that is the case, then there is no one solution to any of our stressful modern living things.
Correct.
So we have to identify as an individual and live like that.
There's no reason to be stressed out and, because this elevated level of stress that sustains itself, that's ongoing. Like I say, when people, for some people, it never gets to come back down. They're always at some level of elevated, which we call chronic.
Yes.
Right? That's what the word chronic means. So people with chronic stress levels, it's going to impact them mentally, emotionally, physically.
Right. Yeah.
Right? And this is not good.
No. So I think we live in a world at the moment, particularly, where we're inviting stress through stupidity or, I'm thinking politics here. I know, I don't want to go any further, otherwise we'll be on for a week. But we've got, you and I met when we were talking about relatively small sort of businesses,
mm-hmm.
and we all have our work, you know. Some of us have different ambitions as to what scale those businesses are about, but in reality, the world has kind of come in a bit on itself, and we now have to make our way in the world rather than expecting to have a job and people to show you the way and all that sort of stuff. So I think people maybe need to turn down their, turn up their own abilities rather than expecting it all to be done for them.
Correct.
And that would be a positive stress to me, for people to having to kind of work it out.
People don't know how to do that, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They haven't. That's my job. That's what I do. Right. I show them how to. You know, bring. See again, because stress is not something direct.
Okay.
Stress is the result of or the cause of. So going back to those four high frequency categories. So if I can show you how and teach you how to become a better communicator.
Yeah.
And there's a whole vast bit inside of that. If that's what's stressing you, as you become better at the thing that's stressing you, then your stress is going to go down.
Okay.
See, stress isn't something you can put your finger directly on.
Right.
Stress is the result of something else, okay. or it's the cause of something else. Remember I said earlier, stress is the cause over the result of.
Okay.
What's wrong with the person, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to affect something else that then impacts on that stress level.
Right.
You can't touch the stress itself. You have to touch something else that is causing the stress.
It's intangible, and you want the
right. Tangible, right? Okay. Right, intangible is the word. Yeah, yeah, exactly. right. Okay. So that's my job. That's what I do. We can determine all that. Yeah, that's easy stuff. I mean, well, I guess it's all in the know. It might not be easy for the guy, you know, running the pub across the street. But it's easy. Yeah, it's. Yeah,
it's okay.
That's not a problem. That's not an issue. That's easy to do.
I'm going to, as ever, these conversations go on.
Mm-hmm.
And people are really intrigued by them, but we've been going now for 30-odd minutes.
We have?
Oh, that's Lord. Great. Okay. So I would be really intrigued, and I'm going to sort of say, just great now. I think we should wrap it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's an awful lot in there that people can listen to and extract and maybe apply themselves. And it would be great to sort of see the feedback. So I'd like to be able to sort of take it on the next stage. Assuming you're going to stay here a bit longer in this country, and you've extended your 5 years to 8, so you might as well make it nine or whatever.
As you say, we've got the documentation, we've got the mortgage, so we're not going anywhere now.
Well, and we can still communicate wherever you are.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to say, for the time being, anyway, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Stuff. Excellent. Right then, I shall finish off as I usually do. I'll switch off now.